Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura from the social media desk.
Coming up, talks on defusing an explosive crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, continue in the capital, Kinshasa, after days of bloody clashes.
In the street, people are really concerned that they are now stuck with this uncertainty.
We will be reading some of your comments on the crisis in the DRC Congo.
That's right. Also on the program, Gambia's opposition coalition has said that the inauguration of President-elect Adama Barrow in January next year will go ahead as planned and in accordance to the constitution.
What must be understood is that he is backed by the constitution until the end of his term. At the end of his term, if he insists on staying in power, he'll be a rebel.
Stay tuned for all that and much more to come on the program. But first, let's listen to what's happening around the globe.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. Authorities across Europe are scrambling to track down a Tunisian man suspected of driving the truck in Monday's attack on a Berlin Christmas market that killed 12 people. German authorities have issued a wanted notice for 24-year-old Anis Anri and offered a reward of €100,000 for information leading to his arrest, warning that he could be violent and armed. Germans have reacted with anger and disbelief to disclosures that Anri was a rejected asylum seeker and known jihadist who had been under police observation for plotting an attack before surveillance was dropped. The International Committee of the Red Cross has said that more than 4,000 fighters have left Aleppo as the evacuation of rebel-held parts of the Syrian city nears its conclusion. The evacuations took place overnight between Wednesday and Thursday and will probably continue until tomorrow. Meanwhile, the UN Special Envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura, has warned that moving evacuees from one place to another would not in itself resolve the conflict.
Many have gone to Idlib, which could be, in theory, the next Aleppo. So we have to look forward.
The rights group Human Rights Watch has said that security forces in the Democratic Republic of Congo killed at least 34 people during protests this week against President Joseph Kabila's refusal to step down after his mandate expired on Monday. Meanwhile, AFP is reporting that soldiers sealed off part of the city of Lubumbashi on Thursday and carried out mass arrests of young men. Several dozen people demonstrated outside the local headquarters of the UN mission MONUSCO in protest at the arbitrary arrests. Separately, it was reported on Thursday that at least 6 people have been killed and 150 wounded in ethnic clashes between Pygmy and Bantu groups in southeastern Congo this week. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The tiny West African state of Sao Tome and Principe has been defending its decision to break off diplomatic relations with Taiwan, a move that has been welcomed by China. Prime Minister Patrice Trovoada said it was the correct decision because of China's importance as a strategic partner and the need to improve the lives of Sao Tomeans. A ceremony has been held in Okinawa to mark the return of 4,000 hectares of land used by the United States Armed Forces to Japan. U.S. Ambassador to Japan, Caroline Kennedy.
This return will reduce our footprint by about 20% and allow this pristine natural environment to be enjoyed by future generations of residents and visitors to Okinawa.
The land accounts for half of the U.S. military training area on the island. AP is reporting that the governor of Okinawa, who is demanding an unconditional return of land, stayed away from the ceremony in protest. For more news and information, please visit our website, dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
We begin today's program in the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, where talks on defusing an explosive crisis are underway after bloody clashes in the past days left at least 19 people dead, according to the United Nations. The Catholic Church that is sponsoring the talks has appealed for a deal by Christmas over the future of President Joseph Kabila. The expiry of Kabila's term was met without any plan for a political transition, with no election in sight, and that's why all parties are holding crisis talks. Shortly before we came on air, I spoke to DW's contributor in Kinshasa, Melanie Gobi, about the talks, and she starts by telling us the mood.
The talks, they only resumed on Wednesday, so yesterday, and now the Catholic Church is saying that they will only carry on mediating these talks until Christmas, that the participants have to find an agreement before Christmas. That looks really unlikely. The positions are very, very far apart, and both sides are quite determined to keep their views in the agreement. So the opposition really wants Kabila to leave. They want a transition president, and the majority will not allow that.
How can you describe the mood at the talks?
It's tense. It's not optimistic at the Senko where the talks are being held. In the street, people are really concerned that they are now stuck with this uncertainty. You know, everything now kind of relies on Kabila's good faith, basically. Whether he wants to step down or not, no one really knows what his real plans are.
And how much of an influence is the church in the DRC?
The church has a lot of influence on the population. Congolese are very spiritual people. They are there's a big following of the Catholic Church in Congo. The Pope has a lot of influence, but it has a lot less influence on politics. So what the Catholic Church right now is doing is very commendable, but I'm not sure that they have the leverage they hope for.
Melanie Gobi in Kinshasa. Now, German officials have come under fire after it emerged that Anis Amri, a suspect in the Berlin Christmas market attack, was known to police. His search has intensified as anger grows in Germany after it came to light that he was a failed asylum seeker who Germany was not able to deport. Let's listen to my colleague Emma Wallis speaking to DW's Daniel Pels in Berlin, who has been following the story closely.
The German authorities actually already had him on a watch until September, but then they stopped watching him. How many questions do you think they will have to answer if he does turn out to have been the perpetrator of the terror act in the Berlin Christmas market?
They will have to answer a lot of questions. I mean, Germany's security services, particularly our domestic intelligence service, the Verfassungsschutz, has been facing a lot of criticism for a long period of time over bureaucracy and over inefficiency. A lot of criticism has been labeled against the intelligence services because, for instance, they failed to detect a right wing, a terror cell that was spreading terror and violence in Germany for some years.
One of the things that has been being talked about is that the government will approve new legislation to strengthen video surveillance in the wake of this attack. It's a move which has already faced a lot of opposition within Germany, which has fairly strict privacy and data protection laws. Do you think that this new legislation will still meet with that much opposition in the wake of the attack?
Well, I'm sure there is going to be a reasonable degree of opposition to this, and it's going to remain because you have, of course, a camp here in Germany of people who are traditionally very, very careful about how their data is being used. And these critics have all along said these kind of measures are not going to really help to prevent terror attacks, because the problem is even if you have footage of somebody planting a bomb somewhere, if the bomb goes off before the police arrives, then still the terror attack has taken place. On the other hand, you obviously have people who say, no, we need more video surveillance, also because it helps to identify possible suspects after a crime has been committed. I think that probably now the majority of Germans is going to support changes to legislation that will give the government more right to use more video surveillance.
DW's Daniel Pels in Berlin. Gambia's opposition coalition has said that the inauguration of President-elect Adama Barrow in January next year will go ahead as planned and in accordance to the constitution, and urged defeated president to hand over power. Yahya Jammeh, defiant despite his election defeat, said he would await a court ruling delayed until January before ceding power. In an interview with Africa Link, the spokesperson for the opposition coalition, Khalifa Sala, said President Yahya Jammeh has no reason to remain in office beyond his mandate that ends next year.
What is clear in the Gambia is that the constitution calls for elections to take place 3 months before the expiry of the date of the term of office of the incumbent. That has happened. And President-elect Adama Barrow is declared the winner by the Independent Electoral Commission. That is the constitutional position. The constitution says at the end of the expiration of the term of office of the incumbent, that same day, the president-elect will assume office. And that is what President-elect Adama Barrow is waiting for. In January, preparations are being made for his inauguration. And that is the constitutional position, that is the position in the Gambia.
Some analysts or observers say Jammeh has bought time by taking his appeal to the Supreme Court. And if you remember, all its judges were fired under his orders, save for the Chief Justice. How much faith do you have in the outcome of the Supreme Court now that the case has been pushed to January 10th, 2017?
A court process is a legal process provided to any person who is aggrieved to go to court. That is a right that anybody can exercise. We have no qualms with the exercise of right. What we want people to know is that court processes do not serve as a bar to constitutional mandate. They are just simply processes, and they should be observed as processes. And we will not comment on processes that are judicial processes.
What measures do you intend to take in case Yahya Jammeh refuses to leave office?
What must be understood is that he is backed by the constitution until the end of his term. At the end of his term, if he insists on staying in power, he will be a rebel. And he is now the commander-in-chief of the armed forces of the Gambia. But when his term ends, those soldiers, those security apparatus, the civil service will be under the control of President-elect Barrow. And anybody who refuses to be under that control will be a rebel. So essentially, this is a question of legality and illegality. It's not a question of a person deciding to do something or not to do something. And we believe the world should start emphasizing the legal process that is in the Gambia, that the constitution of the Gambia covered him when he was elected president of Gambia, no matter how, and covers him until the date that his term expires. After that date, he no longer has a legal mandate to be president of the Gambia.
I was speaking to the spokesperson of Gambia's opposition coalition, Khalifa Sala.
And now we shall get right into your comments, starting with the Gambia.
And what are people saying about the situation in Gambia, which at the moment, I mean, seems unpredictable?
Indeed, Benjamin Obeng Manu says it's not his fault, Yame's fault, that he doesn't want to die alone. That's why he's behaving that way. Frederick Kalija says African leaders are just hungry for power, and that's why conflict never ends. We as Africans need to change. Madison Madi says Allah has already denied you victory. You better abdicate. Of course, we also have a comment from Osei Kwabena, who says Allah is no friend to people like you. Like it or not, you will go down.
Well, just to remind you, those are some strong opinions there from our social media platform. What else do you have?
We have Adolf Damiani, who says President Yahya Jammeh lost the election. He needs to step down. We want to see Gambia moving forward. Victor Kwachu says that Africa has a part to play in getting rid of Gambia's outgoing president and ensure that democracy prevails forward.
Yeah, people are having a myriad of responses on that story. Yeah, what else?
Indeed, King Saw Asain says, let the Western countries leave Gambia issues for Nigeria to handle. Bakari Mwakalukwa says the AU should just remove him from power.
Yeah, we have to cut the comments short as we're running out of time, but you can still contribute the stories on the show by visiting our Facebook page, DW Africa. We'll always, you know, find a way of reading them out to you. And you're still listening to DW's Africa Link program straight from the studios of Deutsche Welle here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura from the social media desk.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes. The plight of school children in a refugee camp in Cameroon who are dropping out of school every day. We hear why.
The reason why they do not allow their children to come is because of the rumors that there are some insurgents coming into this camp. This school is open. There is no fence, no security provided to protect us.
We'll also be hearing your thoughts on the story we ran on Berlin and Congo.
Indeed, that will come later in the show. But first, let's go to South Africa. The United Nations Cancer Agency, the IARC, has been facing criticism over the way it classifies substances that cause the debilitating disease. The agency has stirred controversy by suggesting that things like coffee, mobile phones, and red meat have the potential to cause cancer. More recently, it decided that the weed killer glyphosate probably causes cancer. This put the agency on collision course with regulators around the world, but the IARC's warning has caused alarm nonetheless. Leah Albrecht has this report on concerns in South Africa.
In South Africa, the Inkatha Freedom Party, the IFP, has lodged a complaint with the country's Human Rights Commission and Ombudswoman about what it claims is the continued use of a cancer-causing pesticide. The IFP is the fourth largest party in South Africa's lower house of parliament, the National Assembly. Its leader, Mengosuthu Buthelezi, wanted to know why no move was being made to withdraw the use of glyphosate if the World Health Organization's cancer agency, the IARC, was warning against its use. Glyphosate is the key ingredient in a herbicide called Roundup, which is marketed by the giant US seeds firm Monsanto. The company sells Roundup with its genetically modified seeds, which are widely used by South African farmers to grow their staple maize and soya crops. Cobus Dienkamp is the managing director of Monsanto South Africa. He rejects the warning by the IARC that Roundup is probably carcinogenic.
We still believe it's a safe product to use, and we are guided by many internal studies. Glyphosate is still currently under full review, especially in the U.S., and we still challenge the classification that the IARC has given. So many things are being put in place, like personal protective clothing.
Heidi Swanby is a researcher at the African Center for Biodiversity, which campaigns against Monsanto's activities in South Africa. She says the safety precautions referred to by Steenkamp aren't working.
The issues in Africa around using these chemicals is that people don't wear safety gear. They often don't understand the language that the instructions come in. I've seen people mixing herbicides with their hands in open drums. I've seen people storing herbicides in their kitchen in open drums, and people using empty containers to go and fetch water by the river.
Mengosuthu Buthelezi said the use of glyphosate had serious implications for the health of farm workers, environmental contamination, and the health of every man, woman, and child who eats food produced on South African soil. But while the WHO's cancer agency says glyphosate is probably carcinogenic, other authorities disagree. Both the US Environmental Protection Agency and the European Food Safety Authority have said it is unlikely to be carcinogenic in humans. The seeds giant Monsanto is on the verge of being taken over by the German pharmaceutical concern Bayer. This mega merger has not been welcomed by environmentalists. Bayer already faced scrutiny over its own pesticides, accused by some of contributing to a massive drop in the bee population.
Leah Agwisht with that report.
U-Zone.
In this week's U-Zone, we head to Mali for another episode of our ongoing series on Migration Dilemma. Stories about boats sinking in the Mediterranean off the coast of Libya with refugees on board make headlines almost every week. But thousands of African migrants never even make it to the coast. Either they lose their lives in the desert or they fall into the hands of criminal gangs whose promises of a safe passage to Europe are nothing short of treacherous. This joint report by Jan Philip Scholz and Adrian Krish is now presented by Jane Ayeko.
It is 11 in the morning in Gao, in the middle of the Malian desert, and the first bus has just arrived from the capital, Bamako, after 2 days and nights on the road. It is the moment the Coxers have been waiting for. They are on the lookout for young people who want to get to Europe. They tell them that they can take them through the desert, across the border to Algeria and on to Libya. One of these Coxers, we shall name him Ibrahim, appears to be out of luck.
I unfortunately did not get any customers in that bus, but the next one will be arriving soon.
Ibrahim says his boss pays around 10 euro for every migrant he hands over to him. Militant Islamist groups have made northern Mali a lawless place following an uprising 4 years ago. Human trafficking flourishes. Hundreds of migrants pass through Gao every month. Boris is from Ivory Coast. Together with a friend, they wanted to get to Europe. They fell into the hands of a coxer. Then the nightmare started.
They took us to a ghetto and told us that they would take us from there to Algeria. But then they started hitting us, beating us up. We are to give them all our belongings. But that still wasn't enough for them. Eventually, we were able to escape with a few other people. We just ran away.
Boris finally found shelter at a church hostel for migrants. The existence of the ghetto is well known. Almost all migrants have been through there. Eric Kamden works at the church hostel.
In the past, Gao lived on tourism. Most of the young men who are now members of the militant groups used to be tour guides or local businessmen. They are now making money from the migrants who pass through here. They steal from them, mistreat them, and often call their families and blackmail them.
We confront Ibrahim, the coxer, with what we've heard.
What people say is true. The migrant ghettos do exist. I don't like the job I do. I know it harms a lot of people. But the migrants come along voluntarily.
Ibrahim says the police know what is happening, but they are as corrupt as anyone else. DW tried several times to talk to the city authorities about the allegations, but no one had time for an interview.
A report by Jan Philip Scholz and Adrian Krisch.
Speaking out.
Now, Cameroon says the majority of refugee children are abandoning classes at the Minao refugee camp on its northern border with Nigeria due to lack of scholastic materials and fears that insurgents might attack the camp anytime. The children and their parents, whose numbers have quadrupled to 80,000 in just 3 years, have been displaced by Boko Haram attacks in northeastern Nigeria, but hope that one day they will return home. DW's Mokinzeka reports from Minawo.
Every day I come to school, the children sing during their morning assembly. Nigerian-born teacher Musa Labba says they composed the song when they noticed that many parents and their children were not taking education seriously. He says for several months now, the education system at the refugee camp has been facing so many challenges.
Parents of the children will come and speak to you, harassing you. Secondly, poor turnout of the children. They don't participate in the class because they face some problems like lack of clothes. You can see children 40 in the class today. Tomorrow you will see them 20 or 15 only. Having been that, those who have chased out from Nigeria have received education in totality. They couldn't have flushed us away from our country. There was a time even the parents themselves says that the reason why they do not allow their children to come is because of the rumors that there are some insurgents coming into this camp. This school is open. There is no fence, no security provided to protect us. We are teaching in doubt.
Musa says because of the increasing humanitarian needs of the refugees, parents now want their children to stay at home and assist them with home chores and hawking. I went to the camp to find out from the children themselves why they are not attending classes. Yokubu Gawan, who arrived 3 weeks ago, says he witnessed armed men kill his parents.
Boko Haram has killed them. I want to go back to Nigeria.
Amadu Mustafa, who offers psychological care, says Yokubu Gawan and many others need comfort before education. They are also scared of people who they don't know.
They are deeply traumatized because one day they saw armed foreigners in their villages slaughtering people, their husbands and their male children. So when they meet strangers, memories of the horror keep on coming to their minds. So they're scared of strangers and find it very difficult to communicate.
Which words have the long E sound? Sweet.
Sweet. Sweet. Sweet.
Back in the classroom, teaching and learning are going on. One child, Joshua Baba, says he is studying hard. He wants to become a doctor. He says he will be able to work in Cameroon and Nigeria because he is learning in the English and French languages spoken in the two countries.
My name is Joshua. I'm class 4A. We are studying grammar in French. I learned 504. 504M. It means that 150, 151. It's difficult. I can't pronounce how they pronounce it. I start in August. I can speak one that I have learned here.
As the teachers and humanitarian staff are educating the parents to send their children to school, a mother, Falamata Mustafa, says she has listened to the message. She explains how her children's attendance has even helped her in her daily life.
One in class two, one in nursery.
I have four children. Two are in class two and two in nursery two. Since they came here, they have been picking up and speaking French, and now I understand a few words in French.
That report was compiled by Mok Kinzeka in Minawayo, and my colleague here is joining me again. Wanjiku, what do you have now?
Yes, I have a comment coming in right now after the story we ran on Gambia from Abubakar Salman. He says the Adama Barrow's inauguration is commendable and the incumbent president Yahya Jammeh must accept defeat for peace to reign. But of course, we move right back to your opinions on the DR Congo story. And
Yes. We carry this story. What are people saying?
Zuberi Magwe from Tanzania says, I plead with the president of DR Congo, Joseph Kabila, to have mercy on the civilians who are losing their lives because of him clinging on to power. Steve Achille Boko from Benin says, with regards to the Democratic Republic of the Congo, it's only the ICC who can handle the case of Mr. Joseph Kabila. Matata says, I urge Boris Johnson and cabinet colleagues to have a look at the situation in the DRC Congo and try to do something about it, please. John B. Manirakiza says, the Congo crisis reminds us that there are a thousand ways of dying if you protest.
I mean, these are some of your comments, your own opinions on our social media platforms, that is Facebook, and they don't necessarily reflect DW's opinion on the subject matter. So, and we're receiving these comments. More still continue to come on, and Wanjiku, please go on if there are any.
Indeed, we have MJ Jangler who says that Kabila must go as the constitution says. African leaders do not care. Look at Kabila, Yahya Jammeh, Yoweri Museveni, and he goes on to give a couple more examples.
Anything else?
Indeed, Sombi Mtemi from Tanzania says the police should do everything possible to arrest the suspects. This is on the Berlin story that we ran earlier on. And we have Alphonse Sekwao who asks, which god are these terrorists serving?
This is a story that is still making headlines news around the world, especially at DW.
Yes, however, don't forget you too can contribute to these and more stories on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And, of course, that's all we have time for in today's show.
And we look forward to your comments, which we shall feature in the next bulletin tomorrow.
Before we go, just a reminder of some of our main stories. Talks on defusing an explosive crisis in the DRC continue in the capital, Kinshasa, after days of bloody clashes. Thank you for listening and hope you join us again tomorrow, same time. From me, Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura.
Goodbye and take care.